Welcome to the What Really Happened radio show. Putting America first, second, and third. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
If you missed yesterday's show, it is up on YouTube and other places, people. You can find it. But yesterday, I also had the show, and I mentioned some news items that even with the three-hour time slot, I failed to get into. But that's okay, because every issue is important, and political corruption is virtually endless, unfortunately. But I'm going to try and get into it today. It is day two since the parliament in Yemen banned the use of drones. So far, the U.S. has complied with the law a full two whole days. Yay. We'll see how long that will last. It's almost the same length of time that Obama was in office before he started using the drones to murder people, which was a whopping 3 days. So basically, they had the inauguration, he partied, then slept it off, and then got to work murdering people with high-tech terrorism. That actually, it was a record breaker to bomb someone only 3 days after becoming president. The prior record was held by the prior president. That was George Bush, old W. He waited a whopping 17 days before he and Tony Blair went and bombed Baghdad, who'd already suffered enough. This is long before 2003 when they started the Iraq War. They went and bombed Baghdad after 17 days. And that was about the same length of time that the U.S. upheld its agreement that it just made with Iran less than a month ago in Geneva with the P5 plus one and the talks. They have already started expanding the sanctions, and of course that was to derail the peace process. I don't think that shocks anybody. But if anyone would like to take a guess on how long it's going to take before the U.S. conducts another drone strike in Yemen, please call in and make a record of your number. I'm hoping they won't drone strike in Yemen, but all the experts agree that they're going to, and that the U.S. doesn't even obey its own laws, much less laws made in Yemen. And I know maybe some people are thinking, like, where is Yemen? Who cares? Why do you talk about Yemen so much? And I just want to point this out. First of all, every place matters, but if you remember, the USS Cole bombing took place in Yemen, where they blew up our ship, terrorists. This is the official version, by the way. All the video footage of that attack, kind of like the Oklahoma City bombing and many other terrorist attacks, magically was disappeared. And everybody who got arrested somehow broke out of jail. And a couple of the culprits, well, culprits slash privateers who were involved, were named Al-Hazmi and Al-Mihdhar. And some of you may, if you are 9/11 researchers, you recognize those names right away, because they were later two of the 9/11 hijackers. They came openly, and they lived in the United States, despite being on the State Department's no-fly list. And they used their real names. They used their real names, and they lived in the United States, in California. And they had a roommate who was a GIT agent from Saudi Arabia. Now, how this wasn't tipped off to the FBI, well, it probably was. But, you know, they don't even have an excuse for this in the official version, but how could something like that reach a point of this magnitude without anybody noticing? And why weren't all these connections reported, at least afterward, after the fact? It could have been dug up, and they could have said what happened, that these USS Cole bombing culprits were living openly in the U.S. and ended up being on the flight that rammed into the Pentagon. And the reason is because it all started in Yemen, a country that's not mentioned before sixth grade history books, if at all. And so they don't really matter. So what I'm saying is, one, everybody matters. And two, you never know where something big is going to start, where it's going to begin. But you can guarantee that all this killing in Yemen, in Pakistan, in Iraq especially, and Afghanistan, and the generation that had to grow up in the middle of all that, will and is going to lead to backlash in the near future. In fact, drone technology itself, like airplanes and other war toys and weapons of war that the West used to hold a monopoly on, are going to proliferate. That is an inevitable thing. They cannot be contained. And this is going to mean consequences for the government's actions. Look at how many countries today have nuclear weapons, which are a heck of a lot harder to build than the drones. And yet many people have them. And one parasitic nation, which still denies that it has nukes, even though it's been confirmed that they have them, is what I refer to as Foreign Country A. Now, some of you may think Foreign Country A is a spoof about the Libby scandal and the Plame affair and the Yellow Creek uranium, and it would be because they did refer to Israel as Foreign Country A in that trial. But I'm going all the way back to anyway's cover-up for the Israeli role in Iran-Contra, where during, you know, Ali North and that whole scandal, which was on television, they also refused to say the word Israel. They just referred to them as Foreign Country A. Foreign Country A is that little racist friend with the fellow ethnic cleansers over in Israel. And they got their bomb by stealing both material and technology from the United States. And if you're really interested in how that happened, look up the Zalman Shapiro and the infamous NUMEX scandal, that's NUMEC, that's in Apollo, Pennsylvania, which is now polluted with the uranium they dumped all over the place, the poor town. Or you can go over to Sabell's site on bullying frogs if you remember and listen to my interview with Grant Smith. It's a fascinating tale. In fact, I'll upload that after this show on my own site. You can watch it on ANC Report. On how Israel got the bomb, there's a book out about it as well. It's mind-blowing stuff. And Israel's sitting prime minister, Bibi the clown, tantrum-prone and alcoholic Netanyahu, was himself involved in smuggling Krytrons, which are nuclear triggers, through Heli Trading Company, which was one of the many front companies set up by the now-admitted Israeli spy and Hollywood mogul, Arnon Milchan. Now, this is an interesting character. He came out just a few weeks ago and admitted that he's a, well, not just admitted, bragged that he was a spy for Israel, that he assisted Israel, and, you know, he's an ever-loving Zionist, and, you know, he has his racial identity to the state and everything. But this guy was, he's been the producer for a lot of famous films, Pretty Woman, for example, but I think the most important film he got involved with was JFK. He was the producer of, and he was responsible for, the Alex Jones-level whitewashing of any mentioning of the word Israel from the movie JFK from Oliver Stone. He gave you the kosher version of JFK, the last president to go after Israel for its nukes, maybe the only one. And JFK also supported the Palestinians' right of return. 2 days later, he was shot. He went after the Zionist Organization of America, the ZOA and AIPAC, which you've all heard of. He and Bobby were trying to force them to register as foreign agents, because they certainly are. And then somebody shot him. And somebody shot his brother. His brother was killed by a Palestinian. That's how over the top the story is, drugged out of his mind. And then JFK's successor, aside from having an affair with Matilda Krem, who's an Ergon operative from Israel, also gave support to the Zionists in the 1967 war. And I'll get back more to JFK and the Israeli role right after the break. You're going to have to hold through it.
Thank you.
Hey, welcome back. This is the What Really Happened show. I'm Ryan Dawson, substituting for Mike Rivero. And before the break, I was talking about Arnon Milchan, and he's the producer of JFK, that somehow he's an arms dealer, first of all, for Israel and a spy. And he was involved in the movie JFK, which didn't mention Israel whatsoever, which is mind-blowing because that's not to total blame or any, you know, it's like the whole piece of the puzzle or anything, but to admit that their role and motivations behind killing Kennedy, especially Bobby Kennedy as well, is utterly preposterous. But this is the man that set up these front companies where Netanyahu, this is before he's prime minister, but Netanyahu was smuggling in Krytron triggers to Israel through Heli Trading. Now, I was saying, the recap, how JFK and RFK were going after the Israeli lobbies, wanting to register them as foreign agents. Bobby issued them a 72-hour memorandum saying, you better do this. This, of course, they end up shooting his brother. But JFK had supported the Palestinian right to return, and he was trying to inspect Israel's nukes in Dimona. He said I can't say the word. He said the bleepity bleeps lie to me all the time. And then he ended up dead. And then his brother was killed by a Palestinian. And then you see Johnson come into power. Johnson was having an affair with an Israeli operative. And he also gave support to the Zionists in the 1967 war. And he's the man who sacrificed to them the USS Liberty. And I'm sure you've all heard the story of the USS Liberty. The Israelis attacked it, an American ship, killed Americans. They attacked it in unmarked planes. They torpedoed it. They shot up the life rafts. They tried to murder everybody on that boat. But there were survivors, and their story got out. And then these men were threatened if they talked about it, if they spoke about it. And the entire event was covered up by Admiral McCain, who's John McCain's father, who married into a very prominent Zionist family. John McCain, aside from possibly Lindsey Graham, is probably the most ardent supporter of Israel in the whole Senate. Maybe Lieberman used to be worse, splitting hairs there. But Lord, they are lucky the internet wasn't around in 1963. Oswald gets shot by Jack Rubenstein, a Jewish mafia member with ties to the Lansky Group. The Dulles brothers, one of them was dead by then, but both were Christian Zionists. They're involved in the Suez Crisis as well as Operation Ajax. The whole affair would have been unraveled and debunked in days had the web existed back then. Can you imagine everyone seeing the Zapruder film right away? I mean, there's no doubt, if you're one of these people that in denial of conspiracy, and I know there are a lot of stupid conspiracies out there, but this isn't Jonestown. We're talking facts. Every covert operation that's ever been done is a conspiracy. It's on film. Kennedy's brain is blown out the back of his head. Therefore, somebody behind him did not get the kill shot. Had to be somebody in front of him. You look at Bill Still did some great what we call breadcrumb videos, just putting out some little nuggets of facts about the Umbrella Man and the Cuban, which doesn't mean he's Cuban. That's just his nickname. But, I mean, come on. They're sitting there with a walkie-talkie and signaling people. He opens this umbrella and waves it up and down. He said it was a Chamberlain protest, which is totally obscure. It doesn't make any sense at all. It was a visual signal, obviously, because when everybody's running around, I mean, shots are being fired. Multiple shots. People are screaming. People are hitting the deck, laying on the ground, covering their heads. And then afterward, they're either running toward the book depository or toward the grassy knoll. And these two guys are just sitting on the curb, chilling, talk to each other, say something on that handheld walkie-talkie a few times, and then split up in different directions. And the guy with the umbrella had to testify later to the Senate investigation. This isn't until the 70s. This is way after. And he acted like he didn't know the president had been killed. He said he heard it afterwards. So he botched his testimony completely because he's on film there 20 feet away. It would have been impossible for him not to hear all the shots and see everybody screaming and running around him. So the man is lying. He's obviously part of it. I plan on making a documentary about the whole thing at I can finance it. But like today I worked 8 hours and now I'm staying up from 4 to 7 a.m. to do this show. I hardly have time to eat a real meal, much less make a movie. But I am planning on it in the future because I think JFK is very important. I'm not one of these people that heroicizes the Kennedys like a lot of people do. I think he was a mediocre president. But people have to understand that this special relationship with Israel began with Lyndon Johnson. And I'd recommend watching Decades of Deception. It's free. It's on Vimeo. It's on YouTube. You can buy it if you want it to. But that gives you the macro version of what went down there. And I don't want to eat up the whole time talking about Kennedy. It's an interesting subject to me. But I don't know how vital it is for you. But that is something. If you want to call and ask a question about it, I will address it. But I do want to move on to some other news for a bit. Because yesterday I ran out of time. Now, yesterday I did mention that there was a hearing by the Foreign Affairs Committee on Afghanistan, which there was. And now I've posted the juiciest parts of that up on ancreport.com. These guys, this just makes me furious, and I'm so tired of this. But they didn't have a clue how much the war had cost or how many Americans had died this year. And I've got the audio for that. If you want to see the clip, you can go to ANC later if you want to refer it to a friend. But I've got the audio, if we can get the soundboard to cue Afghanistan clip one.
What the state-approved criminals did to a Mr. David Eckert down in Deming. And
well, that's the Will Grigg clip. We got the Afghan clip. We had the hearing there.
Here's a clip from the Foreign Affairs Committee hearing on Afghanistan that I spoke about on the What Really Happened show yesterday. This is from the two-hour hearing. This is just a little five-and-a-half-minute excerpt of it, where they didn't know how much money has been spent. They don't know how many Americans have died. They don't care about any of that stuff, yet they've got a plan to stay in there another 5 years. No exit strategy, and in lieu, and straight in the face of them dealing drugs and murdering people and the height of cronyism and corruption with Karzai, all of that, they get asked about it, and just watch. This is utterly disgusting. We need to get more proactive about this. It is time to get out of Afghanistan.
Thank you. We go now to Mr. Dana Rohrabacher of California.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don't know where to begin here. How much are we spending annually in Afghanistan now? How much does that cost the American taxpayer? Anybody know?
I mean, I think we each of us have somewhat different budgets there. The total budget,
What would be? Nobody knows the total budget of what we're spending in Afghanistan. It's a hearing on Afghanistan. Can I have an estimate?
I'm sorry, Congressman.
I'll just have to say that it's disheartening to have a briefing from our government people who are involved in a project, and they can't tell me how much we're spending annually. And
it isn't a matter.
How many killed and wounded have we suffered in the last 12 months? Mr. Dumont, would you know that?
Sir, I do not. I'll have to get back with you.
We're going to have to pause for a break. That's just disgusting there. Hey, this is Ryan Dawson covering for Mike Rivera. We are talking about Afghanistan. The number to call in is 800-313-9443. And I have a clip that from the hearing they had in Congress where they're asking them how much it cost, how many people died. None of them knew. And, of course, did you hear this on the corporate news media? Nobody covered it. I mean, you would think that at least on the comedy shows or somebody would pick up these clips that I'm about to play, because this is just utterly preposterous and shocking. So let's get back to that clip with Rohrabacher is now asking the the Pentagon and State Department officials ahead of them. How many people have died? How much did it cost? Back to the clip, cue Afghanistan.
I'm sorry, Congressman.
I'll just have to say that it's disheartening to have a briefing from our government people who are involved in a project, and they can't tell me what how much we're spending annually. And
it isn't a matter.
How many? How many killed and wounded have we suffered in the last 12 months? Mr. Dumont, would you know that?
Sir, I do not. I'll have to get back with you on that one also.
We don't know what the cost is, and we don't even know how many killed and wounded are. And we're supposed to believe that you fellows have a plan that's going to end up in a positive way in Afghanistan? Holy cow.
We do know that the number of Afghan soldiers and police killed is 30 times the number.
You know what? I'll have to tell you something. I'm more interested in knowing how many Americans have been killed, because the Afghans have been killing themselves for centuries. And, you know, my father fought in Korea. And I remember when he told me, he said, Dana, all of our these young men who are with me out fighting in Korea, they would never have believed that we'd be there after 50 years. They never, not one of those guys who went to Korea to try to stop the communist takeover would have believed that that meant that we would have been committed for 50 years. It's, okay, we don't know how many are killed and wounded. We don't know what the cost is. So what will be the cost? You're presenting a plan now. We will want us to accept. What will be the cost to the United States per year annually after your plan is applied to Afghanistan, if they accept it?
Well, we haven't defined force levels there. I think the rough figure is probably about $1 million per soldier, so you can work out when.
And how many soldiers are we asking them, pleading with them to let us send our boys into harm's way? How many soldiers is the plan to continue with our presence?
The president hasn't made that decision yet.
Is there a proposal to Karzai on that?
No,
and Karzai. I heard the number 14,000. Is that out of the ballpark?
If you were talking about a U.S., NATO, everybody together figure, that would still probably be somewhat high.
Mm-hmm.
Karzai, in fact, has expressed no interest in the size of the residual presence.
Okay. You know, yesterday the Secretary of State was here, and he was telling me different things of why we can't, what we can't do to make the mullahs mad. Of course, he wasn't putting it that way, but and I suggested that there was groveling going on. I think we are groveling again. Maybe this is the grovel administration. We are groveling to Karzai. I know Karzai. I've known him for 20 years. And for to suggest his family. We all know what his family's done. They've become filthy rich, and we're dealing with a group there now, centered around the Karzai clique. I mean, drug dealing, skimming of U.S. aid, cronyism at its worst, and we're dealing with Pakistan in order to make sure we have a presence there. And we're meaning in Afghanistan, and the Pakistanis are doing what? We know the Pakistanis are behind the ISI, who they're financing. We know that they spend money that we end up getting from us to kill American soldiers. This is insanity. And then we have people who want to stay longer. It's time for us to get our butts out of that country. Not for their sake, for our sake. We don't even care enough to know how much it's costing or how many killed and wounded that we suffered. That should be right on the tip of your tongue, because that's a cost to everybody's kid. I mean, everybody has got a son there or has to know that our number one priority is that person who we sent over there. We care about him enough. But we have some other agenda in Afghanistan. I don't see what we're going to accomplish, and we are asking what the goals are. If you believe that that's accomplishable in Afghanistan, I got a bridge to sell you in California. Thank you.
Mr. Jerry Connolly of Virginia.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, let me just say, I do think, I say to the panel, Mr. Rohrbach is right. how you can come to a congressional oversight hearing on this subject with your titles and not know how much we're spending every year and not know how many casualties we incur every year or this last year, I will say to the chairman of this committee is actually a stunning, stunning development. I've been involved in foreign policy hearings and oversight for a long time. Like, that wouldn't be a question on the tip of one's tongue, but...
Another six Americans died in a helicopter crash in Afghanistan yesterday. These people don't care about that. They don't care. They're not sending Americans into Afghanistan to help people of Afghanistan or liberate women or anything like that. It's just been a huge drug trade and a military presence there, wasting of billions of dollars.
Yeah, they're just wasting billions of dollars. And that's the clip I wanted you to hear yesterday. Why wasn't that in the media, in the ABC, BN, CBS, Fox, or even newspapers or anything? Did anybody read about it? Did anybody watch any news about that? I mean, that's really shocking. And they want us to stay there for another 5 years, and this plan is probably going to go through. It's probably going to happen. It's the longest war the U.S. has ever been in. It's been longer than Vietnam, where they murdered millions of people. And it's just been a sinkhole. And all the rhetoric that was used, oh, we're chasing terrorists, oh, we're going to build schools for girls, and none of that's happened. And as he was saying, and Mr. Rohrbach, he sounded pretty cool in the clip, but I just want to point out that even the Republican from California that was talking to Mr. DeMont, he supported the Taliban in the 90s. I mean, there are no white knights here. But relative to the Pentagon chicken hawks that want to continue this war, he came off pretty good, as is the gentleman at the end there from Virginia, who's a Democrat, by the way. It doesn't really matter what party. I mean, it's just you really got to get over that right away. But that's moving on a little bit further east into Asia. I feel like I should say something because a few days ago was the anniversary attack on Pearl Harbor in Hawaii on the 15th. And I'm not going to defend the bloodthirsty nationalists of Imperial Japan, but I do think that some balance has to be shed on what really happened at Pearl Harbor. Now, Mike's site originated as a hidden history site, so the reason I've gone over a little bit of JFK and I'm going to go over a little bit on Pearl Harbor is to kind of clear up some hidden history, even recent history. And what people need to understand is that Pearl Harbor was not a sneak attack. The U.S. knew it was coming and allowed it to happen. And it really was like another 9/11, a new Pearl Harbor. They had a RIP 80, which was just the document which had decoded the Japanese codes. They had caught a spy on the island. They knew exactly what was about to come. And not only did they know it was going to happen, the people in power wanted it to happen and helped create it in an 8-step plan that they had to make it happen. It was called the McCollum Memo. It was drafted in 1940, more than a year before Pearl Harbor. And all 8 steps were implemented, and I'll tell you the last four because they were the most egregious, I would say, and that was to send a division of long-range heavy cruisers into the Orient, Philippines or Singapore, which they did to the Philippines. They wanted to send 2 divisions of submarines, which they did all the way into Japanese waters, which, you know, how would we react to that? They wanted to keep and maintain the strength of the U.S. fleet in the Pacific within the vicinity of the Hawaiian Islands. They wanted to insist that the Dutch refuse to grant Japanese demands for undue economic concessions, particularly oil, and they completely embargoed all U.S. trade with Japan in collaboration with the British Empire. And we'll get back to that right after the break. Hey, welcome back. This is Ryan Dawson, subbing for Mike Rivero. The number to call in is 800-313-9443. And I'll get back to Pearl Harbor in Japan. But during the break, I heard a commercial for the RBN fundraising. They're entering the last quarter, and they're taking donations. And I do not work for RBN. I am substituting for this show. I'm doing that for free. I don't have a stake in it. I won't get any of the money. But I do believe that you should donate to Republic Broadcasting Network. These men and women are working hard to deliver you independent media, and you need to support independent media like RBN, or it may disappear. There are a lot of others in the sensationalist media that tend to roll around a lot of dough because it is very tempting to get into sensationalism because it does sell. But if you want independent media to last and you don't want it to get suckered into a bunch of just Jonestown just crazy, then you've got to support them. So please support RBN. Now, well, I've got a caller on the line, so I might get back to Japan in a second. But how about Art in Philly? What's on your mind? Are you there?
Yes, Ryan. How are you doing today?
I'm all right.
Good. I was listening to what you said earlier in the show, and I wrote a website that you could use. It's called NoPlaceForCorruption.com. There's a document section that took several years of research that would probably help you in your efforts. Yesterday, we lost a part of the history of the JFK era. There was a lawyer out of Philadelphia named Charles Peruto Sr., who one of my close relatives encountered. She was dating. Her boyfriend was got in a legal problem. She goes and talks to Peruto, and he says, a good thing you're dealing drugs in Bensalem, Pennsylvania. You're protected by Arlen Specter. So here a big defense lawyer who died yesterday knew about the credibility or the lack of it for Arlen Specter, Mr. Warren Commission, single bullet theory.
Right, yeah.
All right. With respect to, you know, the other issues, you may...
Well, I do. I want to point out, I want you, that's noplaceforcorruption.com, and I right. like that because I like to get primary documents as much as possible because that's, for me, how I have to start because there's a lot of disinfo, let's say, on JFK.
But well, the easiest way to understand it is start from when the Nixon was impeached and he says they're going to expose the whole Bay of Pigs things, which is Operation Mongoose and Zapata. Mm-hmm. And then also when he's talking to Reverend Graham, he's talking about the media issue, saying it's, you know, what he's talking about with the Jewish influence, and he was talking about Operation Mockingbird. Then if you were to go to the Nixon Library in Yorba Linda, California, you will see the two top benefactors are Walter Annenberg, Operation Mockingbird, and Max Fisher, Operation Mongoose, the Bay of Pigs affair to restore the casinos for the Chicago Syndicate. So yeah. If you look at it from there and you work it backwards, you can understand it a lot faster.
New York Syndicate, too. The Luciano had been expelled to Sicily, but Mayor Lansky and that crew, as well as Traficante, who have sitting in jail, they had the bribe to get him out. They lost $1.1 billion a year when Castro took over from Batista in Cuba. A lot of those casinos, we're talking about casinos, folks, in Cuba mostly, they lost over $1 billion. And
right.
People have to understand the privateer method. We do that today. The CIA outsources al-Nusra in Syria to kill people. To use the mobsters to assassinate people is nothing new or shocking.
Right. And so it was one of the Keating Five felons who worked for McCain, Max Fisher, who set up the Max Fisher School of Business and Republican Jewish Coalition, who also in the United Fruit, Chiquita Bananas, who was influential in
That's the original Banana Republic.
Right, the Central America War, Operation PB Success, who then was under the Eisenhower administration powerful enough to influence him to set up the Bay of Pigs affair through the CIA. Through his
And board. Dulles was on the board of directors for the United Fruit Company.
Yes, and that was a front for the Jewish mafia. Still is, as a matter of fact. But,
yeah, a lot of those goobers moved over into Monsanto.
Right. So the point I wanted to make is there's a book out called Taken of America 1-2-3, and they talk about the power control group. That's really good. And I sent an email to you, What Really Happened, which shows that power control group is alive and well, and big part of it. It has existed in southeastern Pennsylvania with the Bucks County Republican Party, going back all the way back to the era that Capone Syndicate up to the present time. Netanyahu was here. Alan Rubinstein, the nephew of Jack Ruby. Anna Citron, the first wife of Meyer Lansky, is here. Sergei Mogilevich, the head of the Russian Mafia, was here for 10 years, all within like 10 miles of here. Too much of a coincidence for all this to happen right here. They had a big part
How
of it.
Close is that to Apollo, Pennsylvania? Do you know where Zalman Shapiro and they were smuggling all the uranium out of there?
Well, it's directly related to that in this respect. Apollo is near Pittsburgh, and I'm near Philadelphia, so we're about several hundred miles apart. when they had the Apollo project, he was Zelman Shapiro was defended by Arlen Specter to cover up the whole scandal. And before it occurred, they had the head of the Jewish spy ring, Raphael Eaton, was over there visiting.
He Raphael was Eaton, yeah.
Right, who was the handler for Jonathan Pollard. Okay, so he comes, he basically, you know, after this happened like within a little after a year after the JFK affair, and here you have Arlen Specter involved.
Hold on, I want to point out who Jonathan Pollard is for the other listeners. He's a notorious spy right. Later in the 80s. Who also was defended by one of the 9/11 commissioners later on, but do continue.
Right. So, Jonathan, yeah. So the relationship is that Arlen Specter, one of his close friends before he died, and he's still in power right now, is Robert Asher, who's a convicted felon when our state treasurer blew his brains out on TV, Bud Dreyer. And he's also a lobbyist for Duane Morris, which is one of the founders of the Likud Party, for Netanyahu, which is his close friend. They grew up together in near Shetland, Pennsylvania. And we also see that Netanyahu was trying to get, first of all, he was involved with the trigger issues, and he's also trying to release Jonathan Pollard out of prison. So there's a big part of this going right back to southeast Pennsylvania. It goes back. They're also the power brokers for Tom Ridge, and we saw what happened to the Department of Homeland Security when he set it up. Said he couldn't do anything about the immigration, and he couldn't do anything about all the crony contracting going on there. For instance, Accenture, formerly Arthur Anderson, getting 25% of all the business for the Department of Homeland Security.
Richard B. Anderson, I don't know if it, but oh,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically, within several months before that point, they were disbarred, the accounting side of it, for the fraud over Enron, and the technical side won the contracts. You know, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, Enron had Was it White? It was either the Secretary of the Army or Navy, one of those. They had Pentagon people in there. They always just do that revolving door nonsense.
Right.
But that's NoPlaceForCorruption.com, and then the book was Taking Over America 1-2-3.
Right. It talks about the power control group that Bruce Willis mentioned. He says he believes if Kennedy was assassinated, then that the people who did it would still be in power today. And that's what I'm talking about. These people are in power today.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I want to make a movie about it, but I don't want it to be 8 hours long. So one of the troubles with it is crunching everything down and making it digestible for people. Because the Kennedy affair, I mean, you can spend many, many, many years and read a lot of books about just Oswald or just one character in it. And so I'm trying to think of a way to deliver it and get all these characters. And I'm not sure where to cut it off because it just sort of bleeds into modern times as you were already doing. So that does make it. But yeah, send a mail over to What Really Happened. And maybe you and I can talk on my own show too. I'm going to be covering Kennedy with Piper and Blankford and some other Jeff Gates and some other Kennedy researchers, Lisa Pease and so on.
Actually, a lot of the information I gave to Jeff Gates, that's how he figured out some of this. I got the original news articles up there, so you can actually see the actual people that were directly involved with this. So that'll save you a lot of time. Some of the history is starting to disappear, though.
Well, yeah, and one of Gates' personal friends was actually in Israel when the 67 war started. He recounted this story on the air with me the other, I guess a few months ago, actually, but... And the air raid sirens were going off, and they were saying, "Don't you think we need to go to to get in a bunker or do something?" And the Israelis are just very nonchalantly like, "No, that won't be necessary," because they know they had preemptively struck the Egyptian Air Force while it was on the ground.
They also asked LBJ to see if they could have the state of Arizona as the new country of Israel if they lost.
Can you hold through the break? I got it.
Okay.
All right, we got a break coming up.
Really Happened radio show. The history the government hopes you never learn. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
Yeah, this is Ryan Dawson again, subbing for Mike Rivero yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And Art, I'm sorry I didn't warn you that we were at the top of the hour, so that was the longest break we have, but I appreciate you holding on to the phone there. And we are talking about JFK. And I think you were talking about the Chicago Mafia earlier, you know, with Giaconta. And, you know, he actually, Sam had helped Kennedy in his election in Illinois, which is the ironic thing. But right. Do continue.
All right. With respect to Giaconta, there was a book by Modella called The Hoffa Wars, where they actually said there was a split in the early 60s where they created what they called the Southern Mafia. That was controlled by Joe Bonanno, and his underbosses were Sam Giaconta, Carlos Marcellus, and Santos Traficante.
Now, let me just point out, Marcellus is for New Orleans, and Conte is for Tampa, Florida, and then Hoffa was also being grilled by Robert Kennedy.
Right, and I'll talk about RFK real quick. But Bonanno was working with JFK's, Joe Kennedy's father, and to get him elected. And then he says he has nothing to do with him being assassinated. Well, that's the biggest bunk I've ever seen in my life. You know, the fact that his underbosses have all the implications of direct involvement through Operation Mongoose.
These are also a lot of the people that Jack Rubenstein was on the phone with just days prior to shooting Oswald.
Right, right. He got a contract to do it, is what happened. Now, to look at it from RFK, there's a YouTube video after the fact where Robert F. Kennedy says, why did you have my brother killed, when he confronts LBJ in the White House? All right, so that's a good starting point. Then there's a conversation when they talk about setting up the Warren Commission between LBJ and Hoover, where LBJ says to Hoover, why don't you remind RFK that we have some mutual friends through Jimmy Hoffa?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so
the other conversation, I just want to debunk something real fast, because there's another conversation that goes around where Johnson and Hoover is telling Hoover, like, we kind of need this to go away. Just blame it all on Oswald. I don't want this to get any bigger, okay? And they were saying that the cover for the cover was that it may have had some connection to the Soviets, and Johnson didn't want it to get any bigger because that would have started a world war. And so he's like, just pin it on him. But that was actually a cover for the real culprits. But all right, go ahead.
Right. And then after the fact, within 6 hours of the assassination, you have Jimmy Hoffa call up Frank Rigano, the lawyer for Santos Traficante, and said to Frank Rigano, we did it. We finally got rid of the SOB. All right, so that shows the direct involvement with them. And you have Martin Lanky.
Conte had been witnessed prior to the killing, too, saying what they were about to do as well, saying that they were going to get him.
Yes, that is true, too. Right. So, I mean, those are some of the points that go in there. The other point is the relationship with Cord Meyer. Okay, you had E.J. Hunt on his deathbed draw a scheme which shows that LBJ hired Cord Meyer to head up the assassination of Kennedy. And who is Cord Meyer? Cord Meyer was the guy who worked directly with Walter Annenberg in Operation Mockingbird in the control of the media. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And Walter Annenberg
was sleeping with his wife, too.
Yes, he was sleeping with his wife, Mary Jo Penashek, correct, although his ex-wife at that point.
Right, right.
Right. And also, Walter Annenberg's, like I said before, he's the top benefactor for Richard Nixon, and he talks to Reverend Graham about his concern. His father was the right-hand man of Capone when they set up the National Crime Syndicate in Atlantic City, and he set up an estate in California near San Diego, and his next-door neighbor was Frank Sinatra. And you also had Gerald Ford's wife, Betty Ford, set up a Betty Ford clinic there. So those two were loyal to Walter Annenberg and, to say politely, the Jewish Mafia, going back to at least that point in time, if not earlier.
Who was it? Was it Roselli? I can't remember. The one who was disemboweled and thrown in a barrel.
Roselli. Right.
Yeah, Roselli, that's right. Yeah, was he in the Vegas mob? I know he worked under from the Chicago guys, but I think he was working Vegas then. Bugsy Siegel had been killed before or after that?
Siegel was killed way back in the...
I got it confused with the Flamingo thing. Yeah.
Right, but Roselli was found in a barrel in Tampa Bay. Well, who controls Tampa? Santos Traficante.
Yeah, okay. And he had been bragging about it as well. He hadn't been keeping his mouth shut.
Right. He was also the one who assassinated Albert Anastasia, one of the guys that set Murder Incorporated, who was under Joe Bonanno. So that's just a little bit of history there. But I wrote No Place for Corruption to show what is the impact today. Okay, And where does all, who's controlling all that power? So if you do the history analysis, just some recent stuff, this week we had the initial public offering of the Hilton Hotel chain, okay? Through, and who was that that owned it? None other than Conrad Hilton, who had direct ties to Henry Crown, and the Chicago Syndicate, who's the, whose granddaughter is none other than Paris Hilton, you know, the good life.
Right, right.
And then you have Henry Crown.
And the Caymans once.
Right. And then you have Henry Crown's son, Lester Crown, who basically is the power broker for Obama.
And Obama has deep ties in Chicago.
Right.
And he was with all those mobsters.
Right. And his rise to power was as a U.S. senator, was the, he was the head of the No Child Left Behind program, which was set up by the Annenberg Foundation through Walter Annenberg. Before he, I think it, that happened, he passed away. I'm not sure of the time frame. But the Annenberg Foundation that was established by Walter Annenberg set up the No Child Left Behind program, which is his claim to fame, how he rose to power.
Yep, that's how they pushed him, and, right. And his father. But they, I mean, this is why I want to make a film about it, because I think you and I might be going a little quick through everything because we're throwing around a lot of names and everything, but I want to make something presentable to common people or maybe researchers to kind of walk through a timeline of JFK and who had the motives and the means and why they did it, and also to debunk a lot of the hogwash you hear. And I actually, I'd like to address something right now. There's a lot of talk about Kennedy wanted to end the Federal Reserve, and he had this executive order 11110, and that's just wrong. I'm sorry. Kennedy was pro-Fed. That executive order limited who could issue silver certificates. It wasn't like he was about to pass it and got killed. It passed. Johnson did not reverse it. It stayed on the books until the 80s. That had absolutely nothing to do with why Kennedy was killed.
Right. And I actually talked to Jimmy Trafficant, and he says the reason was through Operation Mongoose, which then points it back to Joe Bonanno. And if you went back further to World War II, you would trace it back to Operation Underworld, where Meyer Lansky and Lucky Luciano worked with the Navy and the OSS. And from that point, it became the CIA. After that point, it became the CIA.
Yeah, they actually contracted the New York mob to protect the docks out there. And
not only that, they did better. It was through Albert Anastasia working their way up to Luciano through Meyer Lansky through Moses Polakoff. But after the fact, who got all the contracts at the Brooklyn Navy Yard?
Yeah. Well, you know, also in Sicily, too, like, this is something else I'd like to touch. I'll rewind back to that in a second, but, because Luciano ends up in Sicily again, but people need to understand that during World War II, after World War II, remember, they went in, they're fighting Italy, Japan, and Germany, and a lot of the anti-communist and the anti-fascist, you know, a rival faction for Mussolini was the mob, and, a rival faction against the communists and the leftists, and they were worried about China and going right into war in Korea right after the bombing Japan, were the Yakuza. And the CIA, through Lockheed Martin and other fronts, and Kodama and these guys, were supporting the mafia in Japan and Italy, mainly in Sicily, and as well as the United States. And they worked with these guys. They worked with them. The Chicago mob had actually hired a lot of the Cuban exiles that were sent. A lot of these people are directly from organized crime. We got another break. Can you hold on through one more?
Sure.
I want to talk to you a little bit more. Okay. Hey, welcome back. This is Ryan Dawson subbing for Mike Rivera. This is the What Really Happened show. Also, I want to remind you that RBN is doing their fundraising, so go over and give a donation if you can. The number to call in is 800-313-9443, and I'm talking to Art, I think it was in Pennsylvania, about JFK, and you were getting into the about the contracts for the docks. Who got the contracts for the docks?
Well, the contracts for the Brooklyn Navy Yard is what you were talking about, correct?
Yeah, the Navy Yards. Yeah, I was thinking back with Luciano the Jocks.
Well, here's what I do know. I didn't follow everybody who got the contracts of the Brooklyn Navy Yard. There was a lot of businesses owned through organized crime. But when the Brooklyn Navy Yard shut down, they moved to my area in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, which is very close to where Washington crosses the Delaware. And they set up Naval Air Development Center, Warminster. This goes back into the 50s and 60s, and that's when the mob moved down here, and that's when they corrupted the politics in a real big way in my area. That's how that came about, and that's why we have all these situations here. Going back to what you were talking about with the drug issue, when Lucky Luciano went back to Italy in Naples, that became the heroin smuggling capital of the world, the real French connection.
Yeah, the original.
Over time, Arlen Specter, after the JFK assassination, was the head of the Senate Judicial Committee, Intelligence Committee, CIA, and all that. And he used to sneak over all the time to Naples to deal with the drug cartels. And it's been known that Ben Salem in our area has been a major drug smuggling operation going back into the 60s, as far back as I traced it. And the lawyer who died yesterday, Charles Peruta Sr., directly indicated to my relative that Specter was involved with the protection of the drug smuggling activities that still go on to this day.
We've seen that in the CIA involvement both in Vietnam and now Afghanistan with the opium. This is an ongoing so-called drug war, but it's more of a just an organized drug cartel, really, from governments hiring out to local organized crime all over the world.
Right. Yes. But the what I tried to do with this website to show is, what's the impact today? Okay. One impact was, as an example, was after Walter Annenberg died, where'd all his assets go? They were taken over by Bain Capital. Who owns Bain Capital? Mitt Romney. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mitt Romney ran to be president. Who was his power broker to get him there? It was none other than Sheldon Adelson, who also owns AIPAC, Zionist Organization of America, Republican Jewish Coalition, along with many other organizations. And then, in addition to, we mentioned the Obama side, you can see the impacts of what's happening to us every day. You know, if you want to look at a power transition, I have a photo there that shows during the Clinton era that it was President Gerald Ford who basically introduced the Clintons to Edgar Brofman Sr., the head of the Brofman crime family, which Rubenstein worked for, and he was their closest friend for the 8 years when they were in office as president, okay? And the other thing the Clintons were involved with was NAFTA and the H-1B visa immigration, okay? Who introduced them to that was a guy named Roger Gupta, directly involved with McKinsey and the Enron scandal, who took him over there on a junket.
Clintons are also good buddies with Mark Rich, we say his senpai was Boris Berezovsky, who died earlier this year in the Russian mafia. Well, it's really a Jewish mafia in Russia.
Right.
But, yeah, and Clinton ended up pardoning Mark Rich.
Right. But here's the question is, in my area, and you can look at the FBI, the website, almost wanted, he's one of the 10 most wanted. Why did the head of the Russian mafia, Sergei Mogilevich, who could have lived any place on the planet, decide to live in Bucks County, Pennsylvania for 10 years in Newtown Yardley, not too far away from where the first wife of Meyer Lansky, Anna Citron, lives in a nursing home. And also 20 miles away from where Alan Rubenstein, the nephew of Jack Ruby, lives. It's too much of a coincidence for it not to be directly related to the corruption you're talking.
Yeah, it's not a coincidence. That's for sure. And I think the reason a film is needed about this, there are some books about the mob, right, or La Cosa Nostra, even when it got its, I guess its organization, its evolution in organization there, because they used to be very ethnocentric, and they started to blur the lines there with the Sicilian mob and Jewish mob aligning themselves together. But really, it's what I call privateers, because the organized crime has state sponsorship, and yes. I call them privateers because I think it's a more neutral model, for one, when people understand that back in the days of pirates, and I mean like Pirates of the Caribbean pirates, you know, the British figured out that if they could contract out a pirate to attack Spanish ships or something, then, you know, if they got caught, all you can do is hang the pirate individually. It never goes back to the state power, but as a way of harassing. Whereas if they attacked a Spanish ship directly, it would start a war with England. But through privateers, and terrorists are modern privateers, and a lot of the mobsters on the top level are protected by the state.
Yes, and I'll give you a classic example. That is Mr. Chernikov worked with Rudolf Giuliani, and they prosecuted through the 80s and early 90s, they prosecuted the Italian mafia. Okay, now, Rudolf Giuliani, according to our power broker in Pennsylvania, Robert Asher, who's a convicted felon or state treasurer, blew his brains out, that he works very closely with him. He's also Tom Ridge's power broker, and we saw what he did with the Homeland Security issue. And
look at Giuliani's chief of police during 9/11, Bernard Carrick, the guy that the miracle that found the paper passport, who's in jail for fraud right now.
Right, right. But Chernikov supposedly got rid of the Italian mafia with the pizza connection, which goes back to Luciano and the heroin smuggling through Naples. But nothing was mentioned about prosecuting the Jewish mafia side of the same organized crime syndicate.
Of course not.
Right, because they're winning all the contracts. So when you're asking in Afghanistan, the question is, who's getting the business? I'll give you one. What about Lester Crown, who owns General Dynamics? Okay, what do they build? They build tanks, armored vehicles. How much money is he making off of this deal by keeping it going?
Oh, they're number four or five every single year behind the super big players for defense contracts. Constantly. I mean, besides Lockheed and Boeing, probably Northrop Grumman. I'd say General Dynamics gets a fourth place, and you're talking about billions of dollars off these wars. $88 billion in Afghanistan just last year alone. And probably a fourth of that is going to those top four companies.
Right, and if you go back to JFK and you look at the interview with Madeleine Brown, she talks about you know, part of the reason that LBJ did it was because of his support to Kellogg, Brown, and Root, which was directly involved. Kellogg, Brown, and Root is
now part of Halliburton now.
Halliburton, okay.
Yeah.
And also one of the people involved with that was Bobby Baker, who set up a bank and financed this company called General Dynamics, now controlled by Lester Crown, who is the power broker for Obama.
And that reminds me of something. You just remind me, because Kennedy had really pissed off the people at Boeing, too, because he and McNamara had that giant surplus left over from Eisenhower, and they went through, it was either going to be Douglas or Boeing for their new, was it the FX-11, whatever, a stupid thing, you know, they were going to use a Naaman. They ended up giving Boeing the shaft, even though they did have the superior design. And built a thing that didn't work and had to resign it, and it took like 11 years to waste all these billions of dollars. But they had really ticked off the Boeing Corporation, as well as the steel corporations and a lot of the oil guys in Texas. So one more break. hang around if you like. I think this is a nice conversation. So
okay.
One more.